Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for sharing this time with us. We come your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com, and we archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We also link to our guests' websites. We'll be giving you that information as we dive into our program today, so click on that link and go to their website, check out the information that they have to offer, and see what resonates with you. Take what you need, leave the rest, as we like to say. As you would probably do at a smorgasbord. So that's what we call it, a smorgasbord of information and insight and inspiration. We certainly hope that you will avail yourself of that. Well, there's a piece of information I want to avail you of, and that is that what we're going to be talking about is to all of the souls who reach across dimensions to contact, to connect with those they love. What are we talking about? We are talking about the afterlife. We're talking about those who have passed on, but even more than that. This is something that I'm very excited about discussing with our guest. She's the co-author of a book entitled The Afterlife Healing Circle, How Anyone, you, yes, you, how anyone can contact the other side. Candace Talmadge is my guest. Candace, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Well, thank you, Richard. This is fun.
I am looking forward to this because this is part of one of the subjects that I find very interesting and I'm very intrigued by when I hear of notable people, people that I have admired or been close to or what have you, even if it is from a distance, that they pass on. I wonder what they're experiencing. I want to know what's going on in their lives now, what's happening to them. And then come back. I'm not ready to go yet. This is sort of an opportunity for us maybe to get a glimpse into that, but also to get a glimpse into the aspects of how the other side, the afterlife, if you will, the folks on the other side, are assisting in the process of helping us here on this side to heal from that which ails us. And I think what I'm finding, Candace, is that what ails us is less physical and more spiritual or more internal, more non-tangible. The things that we've gone through in our lives, if we heal those, we heal the physical.
No, well, you're preaching to the choir here. I totally agree with that, and that's been my experience in my life. So, you know. I have no argument here.
How did you get started in this? Because with those who have been involved with communication with those on the other side, as we'll put it today, it's some would say that's a dangerous practice. It can lead to not so nice things. And so forth, and that's all based upon one's beliefs, quite honestly. And in spite of the fact that even within the metaphysical community, I still hear when they want to contact someone who's passed on, they always do a protection prayer and that kind of thing. So tell us how you got involved in this.
Well, it was more out of real dire emotional need. I was in really bad shape. I didn't know it consciously. But I was. And, you know, when you're ready to, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher appears, and when the client is ready, the healer appears. And I ran across Jana many moons ago, right at a point where I really needed some help. And she helped me through a healing approach called Sunon therapy. And during those sessions, and there were not a lot of them. I mean, it's a therapy you don't do once a week for 5 years. It's a very different approach. But during the sessions that we were together, my guides came forward because you were talking about healers on the other side who are helping us, and that's very true. There are many, many souls on the other side who are actively involved in healing, whether they're your guides or they're beings who are members of what we call the Sunon Society. That's a group of many kinds of souls, some who've not even been as human beings, but they have been in other physical dimensions. They just haven't been human form. They are dedicated to helping people heal at the emotional level. See, that's where, in my experience and from what I've been taught, the physical is a reflection of the emotional. The spiritual is also, in a sense, the spiritual issues are a reflection of our emotional issues. And what's really bugging us, all of us, at a very deep level, is self-judgment. It is very toxic to the soul to judge against self. And it gets literally stuck in what is sometimes called the self-conscious, the subconscious, or the emotional body. It is a magnetic energy. It is the attracting part of self. And the problem is that all of our self-judgments get stuck in it, and they hide there. We can't consciously recognize them. We're kind of cut off. And that's the goal, is to keep it hidden, keep it away, so that you think it's something out there. It's society, it's your parents, it's whoever. No, what you are experiencing, what you are drawing to in your life, really comes out of your emotional body and the self-judgments. Now, there's also a lot of wisdom that people have, too. I'm not saying it's all negative. But people who really need help experience these, shall we say, patterns, repetitive patterns, you know, different place, different face, different name, same issue. And that issue invariably works back to some sort of judgment against self. So if we're going to heal at every level of self and dissolve those patterns and feel the relief, which is what I call healing, it's relief. The pattern dissolves or at least changes and becomes less acute. If we're going to do that, we've got to start at the emotional body, that subconscious mind.
Well, I do remember looking back at the progression, I'll call it, of the self-help community, going back as far as, I'll say the 1980s, when it sort of hit its heyday, especially with a lot of the personal growth development programs, starting with some of them like EST. I went through one called LifeSpring. A lot of people said it was like EST. I don't know. I never went through EST, so I don't know. But it used to take people down that particular path of dealing with those issues that were keeping them from fulfilling their destiny. And projecting the reasons why on mom and dad, brother and sister, the bullies in school. This was the 80s. Then in the 90s, we began to take a little more responsibility for who we are and where we are. And gradually and so forth, we began to realize, oh, I am 100% responsible. It doesn't matter what the bullies did in school or what mom and dad did at home or siblings did. I'm still responsible for my behavior. And I think that was a huge, big step. And now I've been hearing that I've heard lately that we don't need to go back anymore. We don't need to go back and deal with those issues anymore, that we just need to focus on the here, the now, and so on and so forth. Is there any truth from your perspective and your experiences in that, that, you know, why are we rehashing those things? Or are you dealing primarily with not the past, but spiritually and emotionally, where we are that is keeping us stuck? And that's why these souls are there on the other side to assist us in that healing process.
Well, I would say to people who say, oh, no, we don't have to go back to the past, I don't particularly want to rehash it and rehash it and rehash it and rehash it. There's no point to it. It's painful and it's laborious. The problem is the past is never over until your feelings about it change. As long as your feelings are stuck in the past, you are stuck in the past because we live out of the emotional body.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do when we go to a particular point in a person's past is not to rehash it and rehash it, but to find out what that person could not perceive at the time for whatever reasons, trauma, overwhelm, whatever. We go to find the judgment against self and why and how this person made it. It's not, it is an emotional process. It is not painful because emotional pain comes when emotions, which vibrate, emotions have frequencies and they vibrate. But self-judgment does not vibrate. It fixes reality as something that always was, is, and will be. All right? And when your vibrating emotions butt up against a self-judgment that doesn't vibrate, the result is emotional pain.
Hmm.
Well, in the process that we use, we inflate your consciousness, your field, your aura, whatever you want to call it, so that your emotions can flow around. They have space to flow around those self-judgments, so you feel them, but you don't feel the pain. You're just suddenly aware of how you feel. And then what we do is we say, okay, Fred, let's look at this again. You were 5 years old, your mom told you you were bad, or you misunderstood something, and it's like when you make that self-judgment, you're seeing only one side of the box. In that subjected altered state, with the help of your Sunan therapist, you see that side, you see the left side, the right side, the top, the bottom, and even the back of the box. In other words, you see aspects and perceive them that you've never thought about or recognized before.
Mm-hmm. It makes me think of a video I was watching the other day. The video is sort of entitled Don't Judge Too Quickly, or Don't Make a Snap Judgment Until You've, you know, seen the whole video. And it was actually a series of little vignettes. They showed you the initial one where this gentleman's girlfriend walks in and sees this, her boyfriend, husband, what have you, standing in the kitchen, holding by the scruff of the neck their white cat covered with what appears to be blood on its chest. He's holding in the other hand a knife, and on the floor is this red substance, supposedly the cat's blood. Then they play you what happened. He was making tomato soup. The cat jumped up on the stove to see what was in the pot. He's over on the other side chopping whatever vegetable he's chopping. He notices this. He reaches over quickly, grabs the cat by the scruff of the neck, unfortunately spilling the soup, which splashes on the cat, ends up on the floor. Guess who walks in the door at that moment?
Right.
When we talk on this program, we talk about learning how to see from the different points along the line. It's a different metaphor of the same thing you're talking about as far as the sides of the box, top, bottom, front, back, left, right. And the more points that we can move around that circle to see the event, if you will, that is happening, unlike 10 people seeing an accident and getting 10 different stories, now one person is seeing all 10 positions and is getting the full story.
Uh-huh.
Then we are better able to understand not why they did what they did. We understand the story that we put together in our own minds, and that process releases that blockage. Is that what you're basically saying? And then,
well,
as above,
this,
so go ahead.
With this little nuance, you have to understand that a self-judgment is a story that we tell ourselves in order to cope with something.
Okay.
All right?
As opposed to blocking it out because it's way too traumatic.
Well, and then that creates its own problem.
Yes.
But and that we can, we've been helping people with that too. But suppose, you know, it's just that it's so, judgment is painful.
Yeah.
And we as souls, we recognize that we have the right to live without it, but we don't know how to get rid of it. We're walking around feeling its effects. But when you have something that overwhelms you or it makes you feel a certain way, you cope by telling yourself a story, and the story usually is, I'm bad, or I'm guilty, or I'm helpless, or I'm angry, or whatever, or I'm worthless. Self-judgment. Unfortunately, at the emotional level, that misleading, inaccurate story becomes locked in your own consciousness because it gets stuck in the magnetic energy of the emotional body. The only way you can release it, the key to releasing it, is going and getting that 10 perspective that you can when you look through the spiritual body. That's what the spiritual body does for you. It gives you the expanded perspective, all right? And you can go back and say, oh, I just didn't understand this, and this is what this person really meant, and blah, blah, whatever. It's a very interesting process, and it actually can be joyful at the end when you feel the freedom of releasing yourself from that inaccurate self-judgment story, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So it follows, interestingly enough, the sort of 12 steps, the fearless moral inventory. You are facing yourself, not to blame or condemn, but to perceive in a wider way and free yourself. And only you can do that. So I can get my client to that point. All right, we can walk through, we can get the perspective. But then I have to say to my client, all right, do you really need this self-judgment now? Can you let it go? And oftentimes the client says, yes, I don't need it anymore. And we, you know, then we do a whole other thing, because it isn't enough just to let go of that self-judgment, Richard, because when you make a self-judgment, you literally break off a portion of your consciousness and it goes into the energy field, the consciousness of the people involved. So we're walking around with mixed up energy fields. And part of reclaiming your full resolution and health is untangling that energy by saying, yes, I release the judge, that self-judgment, and I claim my energy or power. That's what we call it. I take my power back. And literally, when that happens, you can feel holes filling up in your psyche, if you will, that you had no idea were there. And no conscious idea at all, and you would never be able to find it consciously. Never. Not in a million years.
And then this process, this internal process, then begins the physical process of healing the various issues that we deal with.
Precisely, because all of self is connected via energy. The physical body is simply energy in a material form.
As the biblical phrase, as above, so below.
As within, so without.
As within, so without. Exactly, exactly. Very, very
interesting. And interestingly enough, Richard, as below, so above. It is a two-way street.
Right. It goes both ways.
And what people who sort of cringe and say, I have nothing to offer God, I say, no, you do have something to offer God. Your own self-healing. Every time you free yourself of even the smallest self-judgment, your vibration increases and the vibration of God increases, because we are all vibrations, a part of the God vibration, if you will. All right? The ultimate vibration of unconditional love. The lightest, fastest, highest, freest, finest vibration that exists at any given instant. But when we grow, God grows. When we heal, God heals, because we are all interconnected. And our healing, it is amazing. The people who are involved in the issues, they heal at a very deep level. They feel it, they heal. They may not consciously recognize what's going on, but they will heal. And there are very few instances in which when we literally call these souls to us in this process of healing and releasing and reclaiming. Very few instances of which souls did not come, because at the soul level, we all desire healing and resolution. Mm. Pretty much all of us.
It reminds me of some of these myths that we were taught as children. One of them, sticks and stones will hurt your bones, but words will never hurt you. That's a lie.
That's a lie, yes.
And the other one is, you can't change other people. And that is also untrue. But the difference is that you're not trying to change people consciously. That's not your intent. By virtue of changing yourself, you change the people around you.
Exactly, because we are all interconnected. Now, the interesting thing is that when I started doing Sunon therapy as a therapist back in the late 80s, I used to have to work pretty hard to get my clients into that subjective altered state and get them, you know, in the space. I find these days people are like, whoop, they're there. And I attribute that to all of the energy work that we've all been doing. It's sort of, it does have an impact. People get it now. They're much freer and easier to go into those altered states and start focusing on the non-conscious parts of self that are involved in healing. And it to me, it's just wonderful. It makes things a lot easier in one sense, that we don't have to go through a laborious process to get into the space where healing is possible.
Yeah, 3 nights and a weekend on a 5-day intensive.
Well, people have been doing so much, focusing so much and doing a lot of releasing and healing. And that does affect everybody.
Yeah.
And they're doing it at an accelerated rate. I mean, if you think about the things that have changed in society in the past half decade, you know, it would have taken, to get to that same level of change, you'd probably have to go back millennia.
Yeah.
All right? It's just accelerating and snowballing precisely because people are doing this energy work.
I think one of the things, too, and I get a little annoyed with those who, one of the issues I have to deal with is annoyance, but I get a little annoyed with those who get impatient with the resistance because of what you just said. It's like, who cares about the resistance? Because they're only going to be able to resist for so long, and then they're either going to collapse or they're going to understand. But it doesn't matter whether there's resistance. You move forward with the work that you're doing.
Well, and you have to, in other words, it's just sort of cut everybody some slack here.
Yeah.
All right. And it starts with you. Cut yourself some slack.
Yeah.
And this is a process of, you know, because everybody has fears. And you can only go at the pace your fear, your desire may be, oh, I want to be instantly enlightened. I want to get rid of all this stuff and I'm tired of my baggage and blah, blah, blah. But you have to respect your fears, and you may not even be aware of them until you have done some work on yourself, because there are many layers.
Yeah.
All right, we didn't get this way overnight. We're not going to get out of this unsustainable energy situation overnight. It's a journey, and it continues, but the pace is accelerating for many, many people. But then even the most determined seeker of self will hit a wall, will hit resistance. And you have to say, okay, this is my limitation for now. I'll live with it until I get to the point where I can move past it.
Mm-hmm. Before we continue, we're going to take a short break. I want to let you know that this is our anniversary program. We are celebrating our 8th year of Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And Candace, I want to thank you so much for joining us on our anniversary program. And this particular month of September, we're going to be talking about this area of not just healing, but also the afterlife, those folks have transitioned, the things that we can learn from them and so forth. And we'll continue. I want to touch upon, when we get back, children and that aspect of healing. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we'll be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, the anniversary program. 8 years on the air doing this program, bringing you new paradigms for a new world, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Are your dreams coming true? Have you been able to put into play some of the things that we've shared on this program, and maybe contacted or connected with some of the guests and put together the things that work for you? Maybe you're still curious, questioning, and so forth. Well, that's what it's all about. We're talking with our guest here on the program, and I'm looking at I was looking at, there it is. I am looking at the book that is out now, co-authored actually by Candace Talmadge and Jana Simons. It is called The Afterlife Healing Circle, How Anyone Can Contact the Other Side. And again, Candace, thank you for staying with us here on the program. It's something that I think right now in our day and time is so critical. I mean, I'm sitting here with you as a prime example of knowing that there's something going on inside of me that I've yet to connect with and resolve. And the reason I know this is because all of the physical medical tests have been done and they've found nothing. And I told them from the beginning, although I was glad they ran the tests, they found nothing, that you won't find anything. It's not going to be in the medical records. It's in my head. It's up here. And or I don't know, maybe even in my heart. I'm not sure which realm I should be dealing with per se, as far as that. So I'm still searching for the source or the nesting place, if you will, of the soul, maybe the heart. Some say that's the seed of emotion. Be that as it may, I don't necessarily think that's really a relevant pursuit at this particular juncture. The reality is that you found a method, and I'd like you to help us to understand and define a little bit more this particular method. The Sunan Society, there's a sunan.com. S-U-N-A-N. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? This really intrigues me.
Yeah, it is. It is intriguing, and I learn a lot every time I contact them and talk with them. But first, I'd like to congratulate you on your 8 years. That's wonderful. And as a novelist as well as a nonfiction writer, I know the primary importance of story. All right, you can't heal without a story. So,
Okay. Tell us the story of. Go ahead.
Well, but it's absolutely. I mean, every time as a novelist, learning to tell a story, I realize that the self-judgments that we have are stories that we tell ourselves because we don't get it, or we're overwhelmed, or we're scared, or we're feeling bad. And so those are the real myths, because it's not our personal truth. And when we're living out of something that takes us away from our personal truth, that's when we suffer dis-ease. All right, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. So what we're all trying to do is find a way to bring the four parts of self that I just mentioned into a balancing and a harmony. That's, Sunan, it's the Hopi word for harmony. It is really about respecting all four parts of self, because they each have gifts and unique strengths, and learning to live and call on those strengths when we need them, and when we'll need them in varying times. So it is. It's kind of a balancing act. So any time we manifest physical disease, we really are just simply indicating dis-ease or imbalance between the four parts of self. So that's what's really going on, and that's what Sunan therapy is designed by a group of non-physical beings. They're on the other side in what we call the Sunan Society. They're nominally led by a being called Dr. Sunan, but he knows he's not really in charge, although he likes to keep things organized. But they gather there, and they come, and there are many, many kinds of beings from many, many dimensions. Their common purpose is helping human beings, animals, other types of beings, other kinds of consciousness and intelligence, to heal and grow and come back to that place of personal truth, wherever it is. They're not saying there is only one personal truth, precisely because it's personal. It's the truth that best reflects your level of evolvement or awareness, and it is the place of comfort for you. When you're in your personal truth, you are at ease and relaxed and energized, and most likely you're physically healthy or healthier than you've been.
the Native American traditions are something that, sadly, growing up in the Southwest, especially in Phoenix, Arizona, I haven't really latched onto. They've been very comfortable, if you will. I have had some dealings with certain aspects of certain tribes in the area for very specific things. I actually participated or attempted to participate in a sweat lodge. I was, on the one hand, unsuccessful at completing it, but the fact that I participated anyway, I do take, at least I know what it's about, so that if I should ever choose again, I know a little bit better what I'm going into. Although I used to kind of jokingly say, I'll tell you what, you guys go inside, I'll be the fireman outside, the one who stokes the fire, heats the stones, etc. And at least that way I won't have to get, and this is one of the reasons I don't like heat. So summertime is not a fun time for me. I don't care where it is if it gets over 70 degrees. But the whole aspect, I see this is what's around us here in the United States, is the Native American traditions. And that's what it sounds like this, it has its roots in primarily. Am I correct?
It certainly pays homage to the Native American traditions.
Okay.
All right, both the therapy and the afterlife healing circle, because you know the talking circles of indigenous peoples, whether they're Native Americans or Europeans or First Nations in Canada or wherever around the world, in Africa and Australia, when people came together in the circle to speak their peace and to participate in community, that's what we ground this in, because let's face it, all right, when you talk about a seance, people are just like, oh, they think they know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what we're doing, all right? It is a bastardized and trivialized version of what for me is a profound act of worship and celebration of the eternal existence of the soul. And we have devolved it into the seance because we are not living out of all of self. We are living out of the physical and mental bodies with a nod to the spiritual, and we're completely ignoring the emotional body. And that's how we get to something that's so silly and can be, to me, can be dangerous, because there are beings with not such happy intent in many dimensions. So we grounded our circle, the afterlife healing circle, in the traditions of bringing community together, although our community, and I think many of the Native people's communities, they would recognize that community means not just people in physical bodies, but the ancestors, those who have passed on, and the descendants, the ones who will come. All right, so that's already a much bigger, more expanded definition of community. And our community includes God or the divine or however you imagine it to be. I don't, you know, you put your label on it. That is our community, all right? It's all souls, all energy. And it includes our spirit guides, and it is designed to help people do certain things. I mean, there are things that the healing circle can do, and there are things that are best left for individual in-depth therapy. But the afterlife healing circle can help people say goodbye to a loved one who's crossed over, can get reassurance that this person, this soul, is not lost to them forever, and they can also greet souls who will be coming in as children, which is very important to understand, because people think that they see themselves as physical bodies who may or may not have a soul. That's exactly backwards. The soul exists before the physical body is born. The soul animates and nourishes that physical body throughout the physical lifetime. The soul survives the demise of the physical body. We are connecting at the emotional and spiritual level, and that can happen before birth, during life, or after death. Again, you begin to get it when you start doing these circles, and you work as long as I have in the emotions and the soul, you begin to realize that life and death are not too terribly accurate. All right, they're a little bit limited in understanding. It's beingness. Are we being without a physical body, or are we being with a physical body?
Hmm. I know that a very familiar phrase was that we are spiritual beings having a physical experience. And what do we take away from this life after this physical experience? I mean, of what relevance are the days at the playground and the board meetings, the ad information and on and on and on? What relevance are they in the next life? What do we take with us, you know, in that respect? And I've kind of been curious about that myself. But I kind of push those aside because it's like, I'm not there. I'm here. And They are relevant because I'm here in this life. And I can't really escape that, as much as there are times when, and not by any means suicidal, but just like there are times like, yeah, I've had enough. This is ridiculous. I want to see what's on the other side now. I don't want to wait until I'm 100 or whatever the age is that I'm supposed to live to or will live to. What I find interesting is that you've been doing this for a very long time. You've also been writing for a very long time. I remember seeing there where you've been writing since I was 16. You've obviously been interested in this for a long time. I'm curious about your background and even your spiritual upbringing that opened you and made you receptive to all of this, because there are a lot of folks who were born and raised in a particular belief system. This is taboo. You stay away from this. It's dangerous.
And that's their fear talking, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
My background is mixed, all right? My dad was a Democrat. My mom was a Republican. My dad is agnostic. My mom was brought up Southern Baptist. And as a child, I went to Presbyterian Sunday school. It didn't stick. I consider myself a generic when it comes to faith.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, brand name religion is not for me, because to me, religion is about dogma, and dogma is man-made stuff, all right?
Yeah.
Has nothing to do with God or the divine. It has to do with the rules that people seem to have this propensity to want to tell you how to live your life.
Yeah.
All right? And, you know, I felt God's love. And I know for a certainty for me that God has no interest in telling me who I'm supposed to love, how I'm supposed to love, what I'm supposed to eat, what is good food, what is bad food, what are good thoughts, what are bad thoughts. That's not what God does. That's not what God's about. So my story is that I wanted a way to take organized religion, formal religion, brand name religion, and set it aside and find out the kernels of wisdom that are underneath all the barnacles, all right? And that's what I did for myself. It was my own journey, and it was taken out of need, and it was taken out of curiosity, and I really wouldn't recommend it to anybody else except the desire to find yourself, because I think I've made every mistake and then some that you can possibly make on the way, all right? But that's the whole point. You don't really know how to do something until you try it and make mistakes. So I've just had to say, okay, those are my mistakes, and some were pretty costly in literal terms, and others were pretty costly emotionally or spiritually, but they were my mistakes. So now I go on. So that's really what I was trying to do. That's my story. My background was, it was important to me. I wanted me. I wanted my truth. I wanted to stop feeling numb. I wanted to be as free as I possibly could.
Hmm. And that, in a manner of speaking, that's really what we're all looking for, is that level of freedom, that of expression, of just being and so forth. And there are so many that just, for whatever reason, maybe the reason is fear, don't want us. It's like, if you don't want it, that's fine. Why can't I have it? I'm not interfering with your life and your choices. I mean, even though we said at the onset of the program, one of the myths that you don't, you know, that you can't change others, and yet that's not true. We do change others. But
hence the fear.
Yeah.
They can sense that change. And because they have issues and because they have their own, you know, limitations, they get, you know, it's sort of that collective resistance, you know, that I was talking about on the individual level.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And that's always going to be. So you just say, okay, there are boundaries here. And I insist on my freedom. And you may or may not like it, but what you think of me is none of my business.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, hey, it's none of my business. I will live my life to the best of my ability. I don't claim to be perfect. I don't claim to know it all. But I am going to choose my own path, whatever it is. Again, it's about personal truth. You know, how important is that to you? Because so many people, and I see it all the time, you know, they tragically chase something, whether it's greater sales or that corner office or that executive title or whatever it is. You know, I don't know. You know, I think the phrase, he who dies with the most toys wins,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I look at that and I go, really? You can't take your toys with you. You know, you asked, what's the point? And, you know, I got that question about 3 months ago when I was at an afterlife conference, and a poor woman was going around, what's the point of all this? Why am I here? Blah, blah. And I was saying, well, and the only thing I could say to her, would you prefer not to be?
Hmm.
And I kind of brought her up sharp. I said, the point to this is being the best way we know how.
But most of us don't have a recollection of what we were and where we were before being human.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of like the phrase I hear quite often of people who have never traveled outside the borders of the United States. And they say, United States is the greatest country in the world. It's the best place to live on the planet. To which I say, have you ever lived anywhere else? Well, of course not. No. Well, then how do you know? You have nothing to compare it to. Well, if I don't remember, how could I honestly answer that question that you posed? Would it be better not to be? I don't know. Maybe it would be. I don't know the difference.
Well, by being, I don't mean just being alive in a physical body. I mean being consciousness.
Exactly. I mm-hmm. do get that, yes.
Mm, okay. Well, all I can say is that I would prefer to be, all right? Despite all the stuff that I've been through and all the mistakes I've made, I welcome the gift of being,
mm-hmm.
and I am very grateful for it and appreciate it. Now, would I like to know how to be in a more more comfortable state with fewer limitations on my self-love? You bet.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm moving in that direction in the best way I know how. And so are all souls. You know, we're all on this journey. And it's just that, unfortunately, love, you know, there's a saying, love conquers all.
Yeah.
No, actually, love cannot conquer fear, because if it could, God's love would have solved all the issues of fear and resistance many millennia ago.
Good point.
But it can't, because we have free will.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we have the free will to cling to our fear for as long as we need that fear. And it sounds crazy, but yes, we need our fears up to a certain point. And then we get to the point and say, I really don't need that thing anymore.
Had enough with it.
Yep, had enough with it. Didn't get what I thought I would get. And it's the same with self-judgment.
Yeah.
You know, we carry around these self-judgments, which, of course, create fear and maintain fear, because fear is a good way to control people. You get to the point where you say, I really don't need this self-judgment anymore. It's not getting me what I thought it might get me. And the only reason we ever put them in is because we think they'll provide security or some sort of delineated way to live or some sort of identity, all right? And one of the interesting things is that what people do when they don't feel guilt anymore, or they don't feel that particular anger anymore, they a lot of times they don't know how to be. You know, if I'm not angry, who am I? If I'm not guilty, who am I? If I'm not worthless, who am I? It's hard for them sometimes to allow a new, freer identity to step forward.
You know, before we go too far afield here, I want to touch upon the issue of children.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have had children in this process, and my first thought about that would is why would a child, a child who is, you know, barely broken in. I have a 2007 Volvo, and it barely just cranked over 100,000. And they told me all time while before it cranked over, it's not even broken in yet. A child under the age of 10, let's say, it hasn't even been broken in yet. And yet this child needs healing. I'm curious about your experiences in that regard. Are there a lot of children that parents bring to you and say, look, I'd like for them to participate in this afterlife healing circle, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, we can do, and children can come. We obviously, we don't work with children without a parent's permission,
mm-hmm.
but children can certainly participate in the afterlife healing circle if the person who has died is perhaps a parent the child would like to connect with or a sibling. That's possible. I don't generally work with children too much under the age of 16, but I can guarantee you, when you see children who have physical conditions, they have, you know, this is an issue that's come with them, or they have chosen this limitation for the experience, all right? And, you know, you talked about, I want to know what's on the other side without dying. That's exactly what the afterlife healing circle can provide for you, an experience of the afterlife without the trauma or pain or expense of a near-death experience.
So where do I need to go to participate in the afterlife healing circle?
Well, the book explains you need a group of small group, maybe four or five other people. You need someone with a need, all right? I need to connect with a child. You know, we're pregnant. My wife is pregnant, I am pregnant. My husband and I want to know our child. Or I have a loved one who has passed on, and I need this reassurance. I need to say goodbye. I need to know that this soul is not lost to me forever, that they can feel my love. That's the stuff that the Afterlife Healing Circle is designed to do. So you get the book, you look at you go through, and you... Oh, this is the process, these are the steps, and you start playing around with your soul senses to find out, because of course that's how you're going to connect with the souls on the other side. You can't talk to them with your physical, you can't see them with your physical senses, but you can connect with them intuitively through your soul senses. So you practice that, you make a game of it, and then you get together, and believe me, you can throw every step out. You can forget everything you've read in the book and still be fine as long as you remember to ask for protection. That one thing, and the rest, you do it any way you want to. We just offer a method because it seems to work pretty consistently.
So this has to be done really in person.
That part and the actual therapy that I do, yes. The healing circle, pretty much in person.
Yeah.
The therapy in person, but I can do remote, like I was talking two or three years ago, a woman had a horse, a very beloved horse in Florida, and the horse had a pretty serious ailment. So she asked me, will you lead a healing session for my horse? I said, sure. So about 30 of her friends got on the phone. We did a conference call. The woman went out and stood by her horse with her cell phone open. And I led them through a brief healing ceremony, and the woman told me, as soon as the ceremony and the energy started to flow, the horse, the mare, just her ears pricked up, and she looked around like, what the heck, you know, what's going on? She was very aware of that healing energy.
Wow.
So that kind of thing can be done remotely, because it really isn't about issues per se so much as sending a healing.
Hmm.
I can also take people to meet their guides on a, you know, over the phone. I don't have to be with them personally to do that.
Okay. And I would think that, you know, either phone or maybe using Skype or some other method to do that but some connection that would work remotely. So that interesting. Yeah, very interesting. And again, I'm very much aware of this whole aspect of the energy being shifted and moved and so forth. And of course, you know, you yourself, you know, being involved with the type of work you've been doing for the number of years you've been doing it. You also have, you're an inner shift specialist. You also teach people how to meet their guides. And I've learned, too, that you don't choose your guides. They choose you.
Well, it's a mutual process.
Ah.
All right, you choose. What happens is you choose a purpose because you know you're coming back to a physical body.
Right.
You've got a purpose and maybe a couple of lessons. If you're smart, you only choose one or two. You don't try to bite off more than you can chew.
Yeah.
But when you choose that purpose, that sends a message, and souls will come to you and say, "Look, I want to serve that purpose, but I'm not going into a physical body. Can we team up and serve that purpose and help you through your lifetime?" And you get to decide, yes, no, you know, whatever. And you come to an agreement. And usually people have any, we've worked with people who've had anywhere between 2 and 8 in their core group of guides. And, of course, you can add guides later on if you want to. But you come in with a certain group, and they stay with you before, during, and immediately after a physical lifetime.
Mm.
The buddy system, really.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very interesting. Very interesting stuff. You have multiple websites, but I think the one we're going to focus on for this program will be thehealingcirclebook.com. Thehealingcirclebook.com. You have several others here. I was intrigued by the Green Stone of Healing series, a book series that you have written, which is rather fascinating as well. And of course, your website, Candace. Talmadge.com, where you can find out about meeting your guides and inner shift specialties and so forth, your specialty being inner shift healing and so forth. To me, all of this is extraordinary. I wish we had more time, and I'm hoping that you'll be able to come back again and we can talk further.
Oh, sure. I'd love to.
I mean, this is fascinating. You know, I sit here with what I've been diagnosed with. That's the other thing, too, is that we get diagnosed with things because they don't know what else to call it. And then they treat it based upon what they called it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm continually confounded by the norms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've made no secret about the fact that I'm dealing with what's been diagnosed as high blood pressure. But I don't know that my normal blood pressure isn't higher than others.
Well, you know, that's the problem with medicine as we practice it right now. There's a hypothetical norm that is an average of these numbers or whatever. And the problem is that norms and averages are just as much a myth as unicorns. All right? That's the problem. There is no average. There is no norm.
Yeah.
All right? But they will base it on that and say that is healthy, this is healthy, and this is not. And I know that my blood pressure came down quite a bit when I finally released a huge amount of frustration that I had carried inadvertently.
Well, that leads me into another area there, and that is, in your experience through these healing circles, have you actually been able to maybe catalog, so to speak, certain physical ailments or conditions or diseases that have regularly been attributed to, okay, you need this emotional healing over here or this spiritual healing over here kind of thing? Is there anything of that nature?
I'm not sure. There might could be. We haven't done it on a systematic basis.
Or is what it I've, very what I've, very individualized?
I think it's very individualized. Okay. That's been my experience with clients, is that I couldn't say that, yes, if you resolve this issue, you're going to have lower blood pressure or your back is going to feel better. I think that it's a complex interplay of the person's issues and a lot of other elements that I probably don't fully understand yet as to what gets manifested as physical disease. All right. So it's hard to say, and we never say we can heal anything physical. We just say, you know, if you have if you are uncomfortable with a pattern in your life and you keep repeating stuff that makes you miserable, we can help you sort of examine that pattern and what's behind it and maybe help you dissolve it or, you know, release it a little bit, maybe a lot, depending on, you know, how ready you are to do so.
Right. I chuckle about over what you've just said, because I'm sitting here thinking, okay, I'm ready, and here we go. Help! Candace,
well, yeah.
I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. I still have three more questions I want to ask you, but if you find yourself in the Santa Barbara area, either you or Jenna, I would love to have the two of you or you in studio to continue this conversation.
Yes, that would be very nice. Very nice.
So to wrap up our program, question one is, who is Candace Talmadge?
A growing soul. That's who she is.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Oh, wow. Bring some peace and healing to myself and to other people.
And who inspires you?
I'd say my spouse, Jana, inspires me. And I would say people who keep their hearts and minds open and are willing to consider something that's not considered quite normal. They're just open-minded and open-spirited and open-hearted. They're very inspiring.
Hmm. Well, again, I thank you so much. This has been a pleasure to speak with you and here on our anniversary program. And again, we hope to have you back again in the near future to continue talking about the Afterlife Healing Circle and the work you're doing.
Thank you, Richard. I'll be glad to come back.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. A reminder that the website is thehealingcirclebook.com. HealingCircleBook.com will be linked to it. You can click on that link at RichardDugan.com on the radio show's page. Until next time, love to Lal.